Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Hello, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne Summer Nights Edition. This is the voice of Ollie, the producer of the show, and I have returned because, frankly, there's nobody else to do it.
It's full-on break the glass moment, this, isn't it? This is a full-on.
It absolutely is. George is deep in the mire of anxiety watching Belgium potentially go out of the World Cup, and Taylor is currently, I would believe, in what he described as a transit van with wings stapled on it, trying to get to one of the Channel Islands. So you've got me, I'm afraid, but I have managed to locate Chris Woff. Chris, you've been at the cricket, is that right?
I have been at the cricket, yeah. So I was there to cover whether I'm not going to try and pronounce his name, the 15-year-old wonder kid who is in the India squad.
Suryavanshi, I believe.
Suryavanshi, yes. He wasn't actually playing for a start, so the main purpose as to why I went wasn't there. But I do like a bit of cricket, so I watched it in India. Innings was there, happened, and then basically the game was rained off after that, but I ended up staying in the press box at the Riverside for the next hour and a half, writing about Newcastle United exits and incomings. Well,
England playing both cricket and football this evening. You would have thought that that was enough for sporting headlines to be going on, but it's all kicked off and Newcastle is at the centre of a great deal of activity this evening. Not least with Sandro Tonali. So let's start there. A fee has been agreed with Spurs, we're told.
Yes, so a fee which could reach £100 million, which was the figure that Newcastle had basically... My understanding is that throughout talks with Spurs, basically Newcastle being clear, the overall package, at the bare minimum, they wanted to receive £100 million. And they've stuck to that all the way through. They've never budged from that. This deal is going to have to reach £100 million. And eventually, I think at the start of the week, just after the weekend, there were positive talks on Sunday night. And from that point on, I think Newcastle were of the opinion that Spurs were going to meet that target, and that is, as I say, £92.5 million guaranteed, with a potential £7.5 million in add-ons, some of which are sort of like to do with Champions League qualifications. A lot of them are deemed quote-unquote achievable, and then I think there's a few of them which are eminently achievable, and then there's a few of them which I think are more difficult. But I think Newcastle believe they will get at least some of those, so I think it'll probably be somewhere between, Newcastle like to think they're going to be able to bank 95 to sort of 97 million maybe over the course of this Tonali deal, which is huge. It means that in the space of less than a year, Newcastle have sold three players for a combined £295 million, roughly, depending on what the sort of add-ons within them. So I don't think any other club was... I was speaking to our football finance expert on the Athletic earlier, and I don't think there's any club who's ever sold two players for circa £100 million plus in the space of a year, certainly, and it looks like Newcastle are going to achieve that. So that's impressive in one sense, and it shows that they can do positive deals outgoing, which is what they've wanted to achieve. But at the time, in the immediate aftermath of it, before there was the sort of positive news that broke in that interim period, it did feel on social media, but even beyond social media, anecdotally, I got a lot of messages airing a lot of concern about what Newcastle were doing. That yes, it was a very impressive fee that Newcastle got, but they'd sold essentially, or were selling, the third of three of the best players of over the course of the last 12 months. Their only signing that they'd concluded so far this summer is for a backup goalkeeper who in the future I think is going to be, they think should be very good, but actually the first 11 has been becoming materially weaker. I think beyond that, which is something which I think it surprised certain people in the club and trying to explain to them the sort of context beyond it, is the destination and the fact that it is Spurs. Because with Gordon, he went to Barcelona. Now that was frustrating in one sense, but also you understand that he's going to one of the biggest clubs in the world. Alexander Isak was a very bitter saga, but he was also going to the reigning Premier League champions in Liverpool, a club with huge historical significance and cachet and where he could get a pay rise. But beyond the sort of pay rise that we expect, the significant pay rise we expect Sandro Tonali to be getting at Spurs, he is joining a club who in each of the last two seasons has finished 17th, won the Europa League a couple of years ago and were in the Champions League last season. But they have had problems on the field and they are seen as direct rivals for Newcastle, and the Newcastle were almost beyond them. And the fact that he has chosen to go there, the optics of it are not great. So I think you can separate the two things and say that as a deal, from in a purely financial sense and for what it allows Newcastle to do this summer, it makes a lot of sense, particularly his head seemingly had been turned. He hadn't really been the same player from November onwards. There was only fleeting sort of positive appearances. But at the same time, the message that the transfer sent, or the breaking of the transfer sent in that moment, that it was Spurs rather than, say, a Man City, I think there are negative connotations alongside that.
This would be, and this is pending the Elliot Anderson transfer going through as well, this would be the ninth biggest signing in Premier League history.
Yeah, well, Spurs have essentially agreed to break their transfer record twice in a space of 2 days, because they've agreed for the fee, which is reported to be around £85 million for Matias Fernandes. That sort of blew Man United out of the water by all accounts in terms of what they've agreed to pay there, seemingly wage packet again high. And then they've followed that up with an investment of certainly more than 90 million, could reach up to £100 million on Tonali. And Newcastle have benefited, if you want to use that word, to a degree because they haven't benefited much from the Elliot Anderson transfer in general. They have actually benefited because they haven't got a sell on close, so they're not going to get any of the profit, the percentage of that profit that you would have expected because of how difficult a position they were in at the time when they sold him. But they have managed to use the £116 million which Man City have agreed to pay for Anderson, and they've benefited, quote unquote, in the current market for a midfielder, as West Ham have for Fernandes as well. That clearly this is the summer of the midfielder again, as it was a few years ago with Caicedo and the like. Yeah, so purely financially it makes so much sense. And we're going to come on the UEFA punishment later on, but essentially what Newcastle have done with their two big sales this summer is Anthony Gordon. I think they thought that they wanted to get around sort of €70 million from. They ended up getting a bit higher than that, free rising to around €80 million. And what that did is it meant that ongoing compliance with UEFA was basically guaranteed. Tonali, they didn't quote unquote need to sell him this summer, in the sense that it wasn't that they would be in breach of UEFA rules if they didn't sell another player. But what selling Tonali allows them to do is gives them the financial scope to be able to reinvest across the team, because we know that Howe and Newcastle want to sign multiple players. They need a number one goalkeeper still. They want at least one fullback, ideally multiple. They're going to need to replace Tonali. They're going to need to replace Joe Willock if and when he goes. And they want at least one attacker, as they are hopefully going to get in Bazumana Touré, as I believe it is pronounced, but they could potentially maybe even want another one at some stage. So that Tonali deal essentially facilitates their ability to reinvest in that capacity.
Yeah. Now you said there that the club don't need to sell Tonali this summer. They didn't want to sell Tonali this summer. It certainly seems as though this move and the timing of it has been agitated by the player or the player's representatives. How do you think that will impact Tonali's ultimate legacy at Newcastle? Because it's been quite a rollercoaster ride for him as a player, hasn't it, with us?
It has, and it does seem that Tonali or people around Tonali have been the ones pushing towards Spurs and the supposed relationship he could have with Roberto De Zerbi, who's from Brescia, where Tonali's also from, and sort of that telling connection. The idea that maybe he wants to live in London, maybe his wife wants to live in London. And so for Newcastle, I mean, Man City have been heavily interested in Tonali. I don't know what figure they would have ever got to. Would they have matched this Possibly not, but if they would has Tonali chosen Spurs ahead of Man City? I don't have concrete information that he has, but it seems that that's been his leaning for a little while. And so how does that affect his legacy at Newcastle? I think it will tar it to a large degree. I don't think it's not the same as the Isak saga, because Isak, it was scorched earth policy in the end to get himself out. But Tonali has spoken about his affection for Newcastle. He was actually quite open in November, partly where these problems came from in November, that he wasn't going to pretend that he envisaged himself finishing his career at Newcastle. And he did talk about opportunities of possibly moving on at some stage, although he talked in a matter of years rather than the following summer. But given that Newcastle paid so much for him initially, and then he had his ban, and it was almost universal love that was shown towards him, and empathy and understanding. And I'm not saying he isn't grateful for that, because he's been extremely grateful for it, and he agreed to extend his contract for the year. He took a partly voluntary wage reduction during that time, because he didn't think it was fair that he was receiving that. And he was absolutely magnificent throughout most of the 2024-25 season, when Newcastle won the Carabao Cup and qualified for the Champions League again. And I don't think any of that should be forgotten, but I think that will leave a bit of a sour taste in the mouth, the fact that it is Spurs. If it had been Man City, begrudging to a certain degree, but it's like, well, it's Man City, it's the most dominant team in England over the last 10 years, and you could be going there expecting to win trophies. Spurs are talking big and they have these ambitions, but the reality is they've been 17th in each of the last two seasons. So he's going there without that guarantee, I suppose, of that. And I think that will sting to a certain degree. I don't speak for all fans. I'm sure everyone has different opinions, but I think that for a fair few, it will sting.
Yeah, well, I mean, if other fans feel anything like me, that they'll be conflicted about this for all the reasons that you've just talked about. Maybe we should put a pin in this, because we're going to have a full and proper podcast next week when George and Taylor will be back, and we can get into the weeds of some of that stuff.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
As you've already referred to, although we haven't mentioned it officially, pending the agreement or pending the confirmation of the deal, Newcastle have already spent approximately £40 million of the Tonali kitty on Hoffenheim's Bazemana Touré. He's from Ivory Coast. He's a creative left winger. Can you tell us anything more about him, Chris?
Well, Newcastle, as everyone knows, have been wanting at least one attacker, essentially a replacement for Anthony Gordon in terms of his position within the squad. Now, Victor Munoz was who they tried to sign, and as we've covered on this podcast, as everyone knows, they were eventually gazumped by Liverpool to him at the last moment. There was a deal agreed, but in the end, Liverpool met his buyout clause, and he ended up at Anfield. Now, Newcastle had engaged with talks with people around Touré a while ago. They've been conducting sort of multiple discussions all at once with a multitude of players in different positions, because they want to have the capacity to be able to sort of move between one and the other. Now, there is a sort of ranking, I suppose, in terms of who was first choice, and first choice in terms of when they weren't in Europe, because they really liked Fernandes Pardo at Lille if they had been in Europe, but when they weren't in Europe and who they thought was attainable, Munoz was that top target. They do really like Touré. Everyone within the recruitment decision-making process like him would like him to come in, and he's sort of seen as, I think there's a rawness to him, but he's 20, he's explosive, 5 goals and 9 assists in the Bundesliga last season, largely plays on the left wing, I think can play in other positions, but more of a left winger than necessarily Munoz was in terms of pigeonholing him in that role. Munoz was a bit more versatile in what he could bring, but there is a medical penned in for the back end of this week. A deal is he's been given permission by Hoffenheim to fly across to Newcastle, and hopefully that deal is concluded. And it would be a very positive move. I mean, it's people inside the club keep reminding us it's still July the 1st now, and that I think as of midweek there'd only been certainly fewer than double-digit numbers of actual deals that have been concluded in the Premier League that have involved a fee. So there hasn't been huge amounts of business, largely because it's June and that doesn't always happen. It was June, it doesn't always happen, and also because of the World Cup. But the very public way in which the Munoz deal didn't happen, and the, I suppose, negative connotations with what happened last summer, and whether that was... there were any parallels there for Newcastle to get this deal done, it would be a huge positive. It'd be a huge positive for Ross Wilson, the sporting director. It'd be hugely positive for Eddie Howe if he has a signing who is ready to be involved for much of pre-season in that key position. And I think Newcastle feel that they're signing a player of the sort of talent like as when they signed Anthony Gordon in the first place. Not as much of a similar profile as Munoz was to him, but in terms of that player who has vast amounts of potential but already has the quality there and trying to nurture it and really grow. And there's a lot of excitement around Touré.
Yeah, and as you said, 20 years old, a young man. Is this Newcastle's new transfer strategy in action?
New transfer. I mean, if you take the incomings and the outgoings, so take the trading model as the phrase that they would use, yes, because Newcastle have actively looked to sell some of their quote-unquote star players moving in the summer. That's been part of them. This summer has been very much the blueprint for it, which is obviously still ongoing, but the blueprint for it was thinking about the players who were going to leave as well as the players who were going to come in. And by that, I don't just mean the fringe players who may leave, the big players who could leave, the finance they could bring in, and then how they're being replaced. And so, yes, in that sense, it's a new transfer strategy because Newcastle feel they got themselves, or the current hierarchy feel it's got itself into a position as a club whereby they got into PSR trouble and they've almost been trying to claw that back ever since and never really got back on an even keel. So this is trying to set themselves up in a stronger position. The signing of younger players is not necessarily new in itself. If you look, I mean, I gave the example of Gordon and Tonali himself, Botman. A lot of the players Newcastle signed after that first initial window, when they signed the experience of Byrne and Trippier and the likes, have been players between the ages of 18 and 24 who they see as having significant potential to develop. And so it's essentially a continuation of that incoming-wise. It's just that more of the sort of stalwarts of the side or those players who've really led the side over the last few years have left in the meantime. So I think incoming-wise, not massively different. A player coming in from Europe, now there'll be some people saying, oh, you know, signing players from Europe rather than domestically. But again, I mean, Munoz would have been from Europe. Newcastle signed Valdemar in the end last year, slightly different context because of the position they were in, but Tonali came from Europe. Newcastle have signed players from Europe before, and a lot of their targets have been abroad and in Europe this year. So yes, a new transfer strategy overall, but I don't think the actual incoming business is that different to what we've seen before.
Okay. And the vibes that I'm getting from the media landscape are that the club are projecting a confident mood and that they're anticipating multiple signings incoming. And as you've said, they need multiple signings, don't they? Because they've got multiple positions to fill.
Yeah, and they've tried to urge caution basically throughout what was a difficult June optics-wise. The rumours about Bruno Guimaraes, which we haven't discussed necessarily so much on this podcast, but they've come out as well that Arsenal's interest and was there a bid, was there not a bid, could he leave? And the message has been that he's not for sale, but given that Tonali has left in the meantime, and that Gordon's already gone, there's been a disconnect between what the club feel is happening and what is the overall narrative around it. And I think part of that is, or what we have to hope is that part of that is sequential. And because there's been so much of the negative, quote-unquote, not all of it negative in the sense of saying what they've got for Tonali, what they've got for Gordon, and it probably was the time for those players to move on, given that they weren't producing what they had previously either. But the fact that it felt like a lot of exits before incomings were happening, the sequential nature of that has heaped the sort of pressure on what they need to do now or the need for them to sign players. And beyond, I mean, Touré would be a very, very good start. And I use that with an asterisk because they've already signed Zhaouen, who they think is going to be a very good player moving forward, albeit not necessarily for the absolute here and now. But there is so much still to do. And I think there's been a disconnect between that. I don't think that there's been a full appreciation within the club what that sort of effect has been on the mood of a significant portion, or at least a significant vocal portion of the fan base, as to what has happened so far and the reality of what they believe they are doing and what they believe that it will look like come the end of the window. It's very difficult to tell someone to visualise what it's going to look like in 2 months' time when they aren't privy to your plan, and nor would you want to necessarily be privy to every element of Newcastle's plan, because if their plan was published, then it would probably wouldn't be enacted and wouldn't come to pass. But to ask for that faith, almost not blind faith, but just for fans to have that faith, given the disruption of the last three Junes, really, the last three Junes, which have been very damaging for Newcastle, optics-wise, financially in certain years, loss of players at certain points. There is almost a degree of faith which is required, and I think that faith has been tested. Touré hopefully fulfills some of that, or gives greater credence to what they are trying to do. But further, if they can get another one or two signings done in the next few weeks, then I think suddenly the positive momentum will hopefully come back their way a little bit. Whereas it's felt like a lot of Newcastle fans, the messages you get, particularly on social media, but I've had this beyond that, conversations that you have, messages you get, is that people feel like they're just being smacked in the face with constant negativity or constant potential exits, rather than how are we as a club and as a team actually trying to progress. And hopefully Touré is the first step on that ladder towards that.
Yeah, it wasn't great for the conspiracy theorists, was it? I wonder how opportunistic that Arsenal bid might have been about Bruno, because if Bruno goes, there really is hell on, to be honest.
Well, there is, and that hasn't been part of the plan. Gordon going was definitely part of the plan. Tonali going has been largely a part of the plan. I don't think it was 100% that they expected him to go, but I think there was sort of 75%, 80% chance from the spring onwards that they thought, and that was part of the blueprint of he's one likely to go, particularly once Livramento's injuries made it unlikely that he would be someone that could get significant money for and he would necessarily move on. But Bruno leaving this summer has not been, as far as I am aware, and from the information I get, has not been factored in that regard. In a purely financial sense, if they got a huge offer for him, given that he's 28, turned 29 later this year, if you were just looking at it purely on the books and not taking into account at all the wider footballing ramifications and far beyond that Bruno brings, there is an argument to be made that maybe you would cash in. But the message that would send, and the effect that it would have on the team beyond the loss they've already had of Tonali and Gordon, I think would be so huge. And it would be so damaging to everything that Newcastle have tried to build that they would have that they really can't countenance doing that. Certainly not in the short term. Certainly not before several players are through the door. And as I say, the message is that he's not for sale. That is not quite the same as he will not be sold. But they insist that they will not welcome any interest in Bruno. And the hope has to be that he is on Tyneside, because I think that for Newcastle to be rebuilding next year, they need to retain some of their experience and some of their core players, and Bruno would be the one who you just wouldn't want to lose.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
There's no such thing as an emergency podcast. This is an unscheduled podcast. The idea was to do 20 minutes, which I think was just ticked over. But had we had a scheduled podcast, we would have been discussing UEFA punishment. Look, I'll be honest. I have no idea what's happened here, Chris. So you're going to have to explain this to me.
Well, we still only have some of the information here, and I will caveat it by starting by saying that, because UEFA will at some stage release the agreement which Newcastle have entered into alongside them on basically to ensure future compliance with their financial sustainability regulations, which is their, basically their FFP rules. And Newcastle were found to have been in breach of two of those rules. We knew this was coming, basically. We knew that this, in fact, was going to be announced at some stage. And so they've had a combined 6 million euro fine, which is like roughly 5.2 million, pounds, $6.8 million. So two separate 3 million euro ones. One for, there's two different rules. One for football earnings overspend, which alongside the 3 million euro fine, they also have a further 7 million suspended, which is pending future compliance. And then another 3 million for an SCR violation. And that essentially is what the Premier League are bringing in next. For, well, it is now, as of the 1st of July when we are speaking, that is now as replaced PSR in the Premier League squad cost rules. But the UEFA's rules are more stringent than the Premier League's. The Premier League's is set at 85% of revenue they can spend on football related matters. UEFA's own 70%, and Newcastle were already bound by that before this year. So they've exceeded that for the 3-year period up to June 2025. And essentially what all of this means is that moving forward, the irony of the situation is that Newcastle are out of UEFA competition next season, yet they are governed still by UEFA financial regulations because there is a 3-year rolling element of it. And obviously the idea is they want to be back in Europe come the 2027-28 season. And by then, they need to make sure that they are compliant. And also part of their agreement anyway is that they would be compliant sort of outside of it, or as we understand it. So we will find out the full ins and outs of exactly what Newcastle have agreed to, what sort of route towards this they've agreed to. They've had to present several business plans. They think that the actual fine that they've managed, they believe they've managed to get that negotiated down. David Hopkinson, the chief executive, and Simon Kappa, the CFO, visited Nyon in Switzerland several times. Hopkinson also went to Budapest before the Champions League final and spoke to UEFA. And basically, they, rather than try to contest it, they've made it clear, yes, we know we've breached, but we intend to be good citizens moving forward. And that will be reflected in this compliance agreement. But I think that even beyond that, it still is restrictive moving forward. And that, if we come full circle to the start of the podcast, brings us back to why Newcastle have had to do the business they feel they've had to do outgoing-wise to facilitate what they want to do incoming-wise. Gordon was done early, and that was to aid with UEFA compliance, basically ensured it there for the year up until ending of June 2026. Tonali, Newcastle don't need to sell him. I'll repeat that. They don't need to sell him to comply with UEFA rules, but it would be very difficult for them to do the depth of business and a breadth of business they want to do incoming-wise without selling Tonali. And moving forward, until their revenues do massively increase even further, they're going to have to keep doing deals like this, because just being out of the Champions League has essentially cost them, just being out of Europe is about 40 to 60 million. You'd be the top bracket, would that be for Europe? And that just went, and that's why that to do the Gordon deal. They also obviously finished 12th in the Premier League, so they lost out on prize money there. They've been hit in quite a few different ways financially in that regard, and that is part of the reason why there have been player sales now, both to, first of all, aid compliance, and then moving forward to make those signings that they insist they will make between now and the end of the window. Sorry, that was a very rambly, sort of dry answer, but I am trying to...
I listened to it all. I absorbed some of it. I understood next to none of it, I'll be honest.
But the key words in Newcastle's statement, though, was that in response to it, was that they have promised full ongoing compliance, and that is they are determined to show they are good citizens to UEFA, because basically moving forward, some people say, well, why don't you just breach it again and get fined? Eventually, the fines would turn into a sporting sanction, and that could mean being the worst. There could be transfer bans, there could be points deductions in Europe, there could even be expulsion from European competitions. So because it could be, it almost gets totted up over a certain period of time, there is that it can't just be that you just take the sort of slap on the wrist and just accept that or take the fine. Because the thing with the fine as well is that you don't get double jeopardy. So Newcastle being fined a combined 6 million euros, that is not going to be taken into account as in part of what they are allowed to spend over the course of the next 3 years, because that would be ludicrous that you're getting fined to then be part of your fee. So that is separate as well, just to clarify in that regard.
Thank you. Now, amidst all of this, and with no shortage of irony recognised, Elliot Anderson is on his way to Manchester City, in metaphorically speaking, because in fact he's actually just finished playing football against Johan Visser. But one ramification of that deal is that Newcastle have a goalkeeper called Odysseas Vlachodimos, who has been on loan at Sevilla for 12 months, played quite well by all accounts, but with no prospect of him gracing the Premier League, he has now re-signed on a similar deal. Is that right?
He has, and as you say, it feels almost cruelly poetic that in the same week,
I guess it's probably almost the exact anniversary, is it? 1st of July.
It was the 30th of June that it was announced, so the exact anniversary. Yeah, and yeah, so he's gone out on loan again to Sevilla. Now I don't know the full terms, I'm trying to find them out, because last year I know that Newcastle paid a significant proportion of his wages. I imagine they're at least still paying some of them, but Sevilla were very keen to get him back. By all accounts, he did do really well out there, but he was never a player that Eddie Howe wanted to sign. He'd only made one substitute appearance for Howe during that first season, and yeah, he's despite there being a big sort of goalkeeping restructure this summer, he was never going to be part of that. And so the idea, financially, it may have been too much of a hit for Newcastle to sell him because of the sort of SCR ramifications of the they're not going to get anywhere near the £20 million book value that he was to Elliot Anderson's £35 million book value at the time. And so loaning him sort of, it makes it some sort of financial sense. To just bring this back to the UEFA sanctions, what this does show, I suppose, to a degree, is that Newcastle were spending beyond their means, or weren't trading well enough inwards and outwards up until this period, and got themselves into such a difficult position whereby they sold Elliot Anderson, didn't have any sell-on clause inserted in the deal. One of the people, ironically, who was negotiating that deal for Nottingham Forest is Newcastle's current sporting director, who was Forest's chief football officer in Ross Wilson. But Newcastle were in such a perilous position, such a dangerous position, that they found themselves in the feared points deduction, that they had that point of weakness and couldn't accept it. They don't want to put themselves in that position moving forward. They want to be more sustainable. Now, I hear some people saying, oh, well, the rules are ludicrous. There is a completely fair and rational debate to be had about that, and that whether it does just bake in the status quo. But the reality is that Newcastle have to operate within those rules, unless they are going to suddenly go and challenge them at the courts, which they've shown no desire to do so. They have to operate within the reality of the situation that they face. And in the actuality of the situation they face, they did kick the PSR can down the road for too long, until they were in a position where they were in such a big weakness that they lost Elliot Anderson for what in hindsight looks like a very, very bad deal all around for Newcastle, not for Forest. They don't want to ever be in such a weak position again moving forward. They want to be able to make decisions about players they sell from a position of strength. They haven't been in that full position of strength this summer going into it. Gordon and Tonali has been partly influenced by UEFA, or their want to be able to bring in players this summer. Moving forward, they want to be far more balanced and see this with greater foresight, is the way that they portray it. So I think it's also a cautionary tale, the Anderson and Vlachodimos one. Not only is it a painful one, it's something that Newcastle have to learn from, and that the current hierarchy insists that they have learned from.
Okay. Well, Elliot Anderson was painful, continues to be painful, although I've got a friend who's a Manchester United fan who tells me he's really gone off the boil lately. I don't know what's prompted that sudden change of opinion. Anyway, Newcastle United women can, in theory, spend as much money as they want, but they haven't signed anyone yet. They have, however, renewed terms with Lois Joel, Welsh international midfielder, who had a terrific time on Ella Toon's Hendu, by the looks of things, but she's decided to extend her stay with Newcastle, and that's good news. She's been a committed player, but also a great character on the squad, I think, so congratulations to her, and we'll look forward to the next season in WSL2. Right, that's it for tonight. It's very late. I'm going to get some rest after I've finished editing this. You're probably not going to get any rest, Chris, I don't think, by the looks of things. You're going to be continuing into the wee hours, but Extra Time subscribers can expect a little more analysis on transfers on Friday, I think. We're going to possibly rope in a guest to help out. Fingers crossed on that. And then, as I said, next week we're going to have a inverted commas proper podcast when the boys are back in town. That might be Wednesday. Let's see. Okay. Pod on the Tyne. supportinggast.fm is where you can pick up a subscription at Extra Tyne if you want to listen to that. You can email podonthetyne@gmail.com. You can now find us on Instagram as well. What's the handle, Chris? It's Pod on the Tyne Podcast. At Pod on the Tyne Podcast, I think.
Pod on the Tyne Podcast, yeah.
At Pod on the Tyne Podcast on Instagram. And we're also at Pod on the Tyne on TikTok now as well, I think, but a bit less active on there. So thank you, Chris, for tonight.
No, thank you very much, Ollie, for stepping in. I think we just about got through it. I've bumbled my way through it, and you've managed to both write the running order. You were going to edit the podcast, and you've also introduced it and hosted it. So that's quite the collection of skills that you've put together there. So
maybe I'll write the theme tune and sing the theme tune as well. Although there's somebody who's a bit more qualified to do that sort of thing than me. So
I'll just say thank you for stepping in and allowing us to do this. And yes, we will hopefully be able to digest all this information and exactly the landscape that Newcastle find themselves in more next week when things have settled down a little bit. Although I say that, and we'll probably be pod bombed when we eventually do that. So,
all right, that's it. It's late in the evening. We wish you a very good week from Pod on the Tyne, and Taylor will return next week. Cheery bye.
Guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.